Thanks for listening to the best of the Ben Maller Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 2 to 6 Eastern, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And to find your local station for the Ben Maller Show at foxsportsradio.com, you can find it there. Or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of the Ben Maller Show on Fox Sports Radio.
So I was searching high and far. You know, during the day, it's, boy, what a life I have. I'm looking for crap to talk about, and I was like, I really want to see if I can find something in that Saints-Rams game that I can make it 5 days in a row. An entire week. Think about where an entire week of radio about Saints derangement syndrome. And I thought, well, early in the day, there's nothing that really stood out. And I was like, there's some things that I'm interested in. The Dodgers made a move. I need to complain about that so I can do that. I'm already starting to get annoyed with James Harden so I can complain about that. And I saw this story about the Browns, and I was like, well, that's pretty good. I could talk about that. There's some interesting stuff in there. But there was nothing about the Saints game that really stood out to me. I mean, we'd gone over most of the stuff, and I don't like to repeat stuff. I mean, we talk about this every day, but I don't like to repeat stuff. And so we've done this frame-by-frame analysis of the NFC title game, which I love. I think it's one of the great games I've ever seen. Rams deserve to win the game and all that. We've spent so much time on it, focusing on the absurdity of the New Orleans Saints fan base. And then at some point, this gif dropped out of the heavens late in the day on Thursday, and it does not involve the lunatic fan base that have been rude, combative, and just obnoxious, the Saints fans that I've dealt with. Now, there used to be someone that worked here who was a Saints fan, and what was her name? Very nice, but she doesn't work anymore. But I haven't heard her. You don't even know who that is, Roberta. I have no idea. But anyway, all right, so it's not the point. So the lunatics and all that, now we have overlooked the Saints players. We have sniffling, spoiled children serving up sour grapes. But the thing that dropped from the heavens, which is going to make this whole 5 days in a row thing that we're trying to do, if you've not heard, if you're not paying attention, this is great. Enter tight end Benjamin Watson from stage right. Now, he has gone into the pole position for stupidity. In this particular story, he's neck and neck with the preacher, Bill Miller, who's got the prayer flags that he's going to debut this Super Bowl.
Go to hell, Bill Miller.
There you go. Well, no, I don't. I think if you go to church with Bill Miller, you're not going to hell. I think that's the opposite. Anyway, all right. So what Benjamin Watson has done, the tight end, he's a tight end, has upstaged all the other cartoon characters. So what did he do? Benjamin Watson wrote an open letter to Roger Goodell. So for the purposes of this Maller monologue, think of this as a Shakespearean reading. Roberto, do you have any music that we can play here as I pretend to be? Oh, that's perfect. There you go. The Romo music bed, the sappy music bed is perfect for this. I am now, just imagine I am Benjamin Watson, veteran tight end. Here we go. Commissioner Goodell, we all realize that football is an imperfect game, played, coached, and officiated by imperfect people. What occurred last Sunday in New Orleans, though, was outside of the expected and accepted of the norm. Watson continues. Your continued silence on this matter is unbecoming of the position you hold, detrimental to the very integrity of the game, and disrespectful and dismissive to football fans everywhere. Continued. From the locker room to Park Avenue, accountability is what makes our league great. Lead by example. We are waiting. Period. Stop. How'd I do? Is that good? Do I have a chance to do, like, I can go travel around when I lose this job and I can have voiceover work.
Yeah.
All right, let's discuss. Now, on the Maller scale of absurdity, one to ten, where does Benjamin Watson's open letter to Roger Goodell rank? 10++++. My observations. You've got the clown prince, the cheerleader, and Donald Trump. Those three things, and we will put these together like bacon and eggs. You know, I'm not a bacon eater, but I'm told bacon and eggs is the perfect breakfast. I've been told that is the perfect combination. It is for breakfast what peanut butter and jelly is to like a nice snack when you're a kid or a lunch or something like that, or maybe a dinner if you're poor. All right, now to kick off with Benjamin Watson, I believe will regret this. And I have this voice in my head, my grandfather who passed away many years ago, and what he would say if I told him about this story, he'd say, "What a mashugana," is what he would say for Benjamin Watson. He comes across as the scorned ex-girlfriend. Now, I was always the one getting dumped by girls, but I'm told by my guy friends that actually were able to dump their girlfriends that this happened a lot, and it still happens today, right? That's what Watson seems like. How could you? This is what he seems like, the ex-girlfriend. How could you treat me like that? I treated you so well, and you dumped me. I loved you so much. That's essentially what Benjamin Watson is saying. Now, my issue, I want to be clear here. I want to be transparent. My issue is not that Benjamin Watson wrote the letter. He made one fatal mistake. Do you know what his one fatal mistake was? He clicked the send button on his phone. That took an unimaginable amount of chutzpah. I understand, and I've heard from people over the years, that therapeutic writing when someone dies or someone screws you over is recommended, right? The unsent letter. You've heard about that. We've all heard about that. The unsent letter, a way of expressing your feelings. If you hate your boss, right, you write the most vile, disgusting things about your boss and your boss's family, but you better not send it. And Benjamin Watson, while this was not vile and disgusting, it was unbecoming of an NFL player. And you know, if somebody makes you mad, bad, or sad, you're supposed to write an unsent letter, right? Now, clearly Roger Goodell has made the Saints players mad. He's treated them bad and made them sad. All three of those things. By sending the letter, he now, Watson, becomes the clown prince of this story. He's officially the laughingstock of the entire episode. I guess in one way, you're royalty. Royalty when it comes to fools, but you're still royalty as the clown prince. Now, furthermore, you know and I know how many catches Benjamin Watson had in the NFC title game. Maybe you don't know. Maybe you didn't keep track of that. Yeah, he had the same as you and me. Bupkis. He didn't do, as Jim Moore, who I used to work with here, he didn't do diddly-poo for the New Orleans Saints. Zero, nothing, nada for Benjamin Watson. Now, the kicker to this story, you know what the kicker is? I'll tell you what the kicker is. The kicker to this story is that Benjamin Watson didn't even play in the NFC Championship game. He was a cheerleader. He was a spectator. Didn't play. Didn't get on the field. He was inactive. Appendicitis, they said. So what is the driving force behind this pain for Watson? Well, we're told he's planning on retiring from the NFL. So now this could be positioned as some kind of sad, sappy story about a guy who came close to his first ever Super Bowl and he couldn't make it. But that's not the story. Benjamin Watson already won a Super Bowl as a player with the Patriots back in 04. That was the Donovan McNabb barfing in the huddle Super Bowl. That's how I remember that Eagle-Patriots Super Bowl, the one the Patriots won in Super Bowl 39 in Jacksonville. So Watson got a ring. He's now trying, you know, he wants another one on the way out. He wants to go out, you know, that walk-off Jordan moment, which he ruined by coming back with the Wizards. But you get the point. All right, now, the last thing here, Roger Goodell, I've now formed my opinion of it. I've changed a little bit. My opinion now, Roger Goodell, he is wise to just not even respond to these morons. All right, don't even respond. Don't talk about the NFC title game. Now, he's going to have to talk about it, the state of the NFL address before the Super Bowl. He'll be asked about it. And you can give a comment then. But take a page out of President Donald Trump's playbook. Now, Trump gets criticized all the time. Some of it's deserved, some of it's not. And he often, people demand apologies from the president. And he scoffs at them. He almost never gives them and doesn't even acknowledge the things that people think he should apologize for.
Many, many French fries.
Yeah, he eats French fries instead. You know, when, instead of an apology, he just eats a big, giant McDonald's French fry, which sounds good right now. He doesn't show contrition. He doesn't demonstrate empathy, the president. And in this case, neither should the commissioner, Roger Goodell. The normal rules of social behavior, you know, one-on-one, you probably should apologize, right? I think most of us were raised that way. As you want to apologize and all, that's the proper way as an adult, rules of social behavior. They don't translate, though, to the irrational world of the NFL. If Roger Goodell would apologize, it would only make things worse. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. It prolongs the story. It adds jet fuel to the outrage mob. And the Saints players now, and mostly the fans, but the Saints players here, are suffering from neurosis. What's done is done. What's dead is dead. What's lost is lost. Deal with it. No message from Roger Goodell on Park Avenue is going to satisfy the angry mob. It's not going to matter. And also, it opens up Pandora's box. Because if Roger Goodell issues an apology to the Saints, which he shouldn't do, guess what? Other people are going to come forward and say, hey, I would like an apology too, Mr. Commissioner. I'm a Seahawks fan, and I was 12 years old when the Seahawks played in Super Bowl 40 against the Steelers, and we got jobbed by the referees. So I would like an apology, Mr. Commissioner. Can I get one? You apologize to the Saints. What, you don't like the Seahawks? We got screwed over. How about Marshall Faulk, who's been bitching about the St. Louis Rams losing to the Patriots in that Super Bowl? He'd like an apology, Mr. Commissioner. We can go on. Tom Brady. He shouldn't have been suspended. Why'd you suspend Tom Brady? He would like an apology. The entire state of Ohio, well, northern Ohio, well, actually the whole state of Ohio, the northern part of Ohio would like an apology for the Cleveland Browns and Hugh Jackson. The southern part of Ohio would like apology, Dick and Dayton leading the charge, for the Marvin Lewis era of Bengals football. We can go on and on. Right, can go on and on. And you know, the public and the media are going to demand more apologies. And the apologies then create their own stories, right? Keeping that in the headlines far more than Roger Goodell wants. It's all about the Super Bowl. And as for the Saints-Rams game, let's go back to that again. To the gist of all this, the start of it. Blown calls, human error are part of the fabric of American sports. I've been saying it all week. The referees and the sport itself, check this out, as Benjamin Watson referenced, are imperfect. Mistakes happen. You always have to beat the team you're playing and the officials. And if the game's close and you're depending on the officials giving you the call, even if you should get the call, that's a bad job by you. Roger Goodell would have to highlight, if he issues a statement, to be fair, the fact that the Saints were the beneficiary of some bad calls that could have helped the Los Angeles Rams out. That savage, dirty face mask of Jared Goff could have broken the man's neck. And that wasn't called a penalty. That wasn't called a penalty. Right? Didn't call that. See, that's the tough love. The Saints can't handle that. Their fan base can't handle that. You blew a 2-touchdown lead for all intents and purposes. You gave up a game-tying drive in regulation after you got the lead after this great injustice. You got the ball first in overtime. You still vomited all over the field. All the injustice. And you can also assume, and some people are trying to assume, well, we would have won the game. How many kickers have we seen with gimme field goals, shank it, double doink it, Will Luntz? How do you know he would have made the field goal? Maybe the guy would have urinated down his leg instead of making the field goal. How about that? All right, it's the Ben Maller. Boy, that was, you know what that was? Therapeutic for me. All right, it is the Ben Maller Show on Fox. We say hello to Edmund Dallas, Steamboat Willie, Judas, Solid Gold Garcia, who's right over there. There he is.
Now, you know, Roger Goodell, as you mentioned, has that State of the League address he does before the Super Bowl. Would you think that he would address this, come out with some sort of a statement before that, so that every question in that address is not about this Saints situation?
Well,
is that going to happen anyway, so just might as well wait?
Well, that would be a Belichick move. Right, that would be a Belichick move, because the move here is you issue a one-line sentence.
Yeah, and then you can say, oh, I addressed it already.
It's all in the release.
That's right.
It's all in the release. You can say, that's a way to deflect. So that's not a bad call. Like, if PR people will say, all right, we'll issue a very non-emotional statement, and then that's it, and then you just direct people to the statement. And that used to drive me nuts when I was a radio reporter.
Your boy Torts did that recently. People who don't know the NHL.
I love that guy. My
Columbus
favorite,
Blue Jackets head
my
coach.
My favorite hockey coach is John Tortorella.
He literally told the media, it's in the release. Like five or six times.
It's
in the release.
He has got the Belichick personality for hockey. He's definitely got that surly, that's his public persona. But I remember years ago, I never thought I'd mention this name on the show when I came in here, but the Angels, I was covering the Angels, and they made a move. Tony Phillips, the late Tony Phillips, got arrested at a crack house in Anaheim back before they cleaned up the area around Disneyland. There were some seedy hotels that were like crack hotels and stuff. You know, Weed Man would be in that area. But anyway, all right, so I'm kidding, Weed Man, relax.
Oh, no.
So Tony Phillips got arrested at this hotel in Anaheim.
I do remember that. Yeah.
So I'm covering the story, right? And I'm getting peppered by the Associated Press. They need audio of the GM of the Angels, Bill Bavasi. And the Angels issued a release. Bavasi then stood there and said, I'm not going to take any questions, but here's the release. But I needed audio. I needed someone. I asked him, can you read the release? He said, no. He wouldn't read the release. They directed me to the release. So hey, that's the non sequitur, but that's what popped into my head.
I like it.
Pretty much whatever pops into my head, I read. Whatever pops into my head.
Well, you got 4 hours, so you know.
I just repeat that. Yeah, that's how I operate. So, are you excited?
You're stupid.
We're going to Atlanta, Eddie. We're going to be there
for
virtual radio row.
I did not know that.
This is my almost 20th year of covering the Super Bowl from virtual radio row.
This is breaking news, everybody.
Yes. This is the only show where our listeners go to Radio Row. We don't, but we'll virtually be there, Eddie.
Virtually?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I've actually been there twice. I'd like to go again.
You don't need to brag. While working with me, you will never go again.
That's true.
You will
not.
Good
point.
That is over. You need to get as far away from me as you can. Because I'm thinking of all the people I work with that are going. Danny G's going to be there. I used to work with him. Bob Garam, another one of my old producers, he's going to go.
Wrong Button Bob's going
to
be there?
Wrong Button Bob's going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, boy.
He could shut the whole thing down. If the lights go out in the Super Bowl, it's Wrong Button Bob. Jonas Knox, I used to work with him before he got on the show.
Jonas is going?
Now
I really feel bad that
yes.
I'm not going.
These are all people I've worked with over the years.
I can't believe Knox is going.
Yeah, Jonas is going. Got 40 minute show a day. That's a lot of work, Eddie. Let me tell you something. There's a lot of things going on in that 40 minutes a day, with commercials and all that. That's good to go. All right. Anyway, all right. Not that I'm ripping anybody. I'm not ripping anybody. I'm happy that I'm going to hold down the fort, Eddie. I was told by
one holds the fort down better than you do.
Yeah, I was told by
you
one
have so much experience.
Yeah, I mean, every year I hold down the fort. I'm like the house sitter. You know, I remember my mom used to get so upset because my grandfather every summer would get this big RV. He'd rent this big RV, and he'd take my aunt and uncle and their kids on this huge. Every year, they'd go to Florida 1 year, Arizona, wherever, and Texas, and they never took us. And my mom, she had to watch the house. She would get so upset, my mom, that my grandpa didn't take us on the trip. But we all, you know, they'd always had to work, so they couldn't go. But she just wanted to be invited. It's kind of like me. I want to be invited. I don't really want to go to Atlanta. You want us to go to Atlanta in January? It's like 40 degrees every day. It's nasty weather. It's terrible. I don't really want to go there, but I'd like to be invited. You know.
I understand.
Yeah. All right.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So the talk of the NBA this week is all about the beard. Now, what happened at Madison Square Garden the other night, and we talked about it briefly. We did. We didn't do a full Mallard monologue, though. We did not do that. But James Harden went nutso. He had 61 points, the Avalanche against the sorrowful Knickerbockers, and the New York media machine has worked overtime now to canonize Harden. The accolades piling up, the stat-stuffing expedition. James Harden has the NBA's fourth longest streak of 30-point games. The fourth longest streak of 40-point games for James Harden. He's scored 30 or more in each of the past 21 games. Wilt Chamberlain holds the three streaks ahead of James Harden. So he's in company with Wilt Chamberlain. He's the fifth player in NBA history to have multiple 60-point games. The first player ever to have 20 foul shots attempted and 20-plus three-point shots in a game. We can go on and on. On and on and on. The stat guys are working overtime. So I want to talk about this. Now, everyone's just been throwing all kinds of praise and drop the jaw. I can't believe it. Take a bow. We're all supposed to take a bow to James Harden. So the question is, where are you at on this James Harden historic streak? Now, I've watched James Harden many of these games. I've watched the Rockets. They've been in my rotation. They're in that mix of teams that I keep an eye on when I'm watching a couple games a night in the NBA. But I'm not where everyone else is on this. I don't. I put this streak in the same category as what Russell Westbrook did when Russell Westbrook jerry-rigged the stat book to have that, you know, triple-double where teammates were running out of the way of rebounds like it was a hand grenade coming down because they wanted Westbrook to get rebounds. And there's video evidence of that on the interweb. You can check that out. So I rip Russell Westbrook. I'm not going to be a hypocrite here. I'm going to rip James Harden too. I think what's happening here is deception. And when I see deception, I'm wired to point out deception. And a lot of people are not that bright, and they just, whatever they see, they think, well, that's on the up and up. This is not on the up and up. So my thoughts on this, you've got the tools, Big Poppy, and the whistle. All right, those three things. Now, James Harden is, to me, the most uninteresting great player in the NBA. And I realize I'm in the minority in that. When you consider him among the legends of this generation, and let's go back 30 years. Let's go back 30 years, which is, man, that's what, early 80s, 30 years. All right, we'll go back to that. If you go back in time, and I've watched the NBA for a while, and not that long. I'm not that old. I'm almost 30. So, but if you go back and look at the NBA, Harden simply doesn't cut the mustard, or maybe he does, in terms of entertainment, right? His style of play is the issue. It's not the numbers. Listen, the numbers are great. They're jerry-rigged numbers. The numbers are great. Steph Curry, you watch Steph Curry play, he's got insane range, and he can go nutso, right? Sweet jumper, babyface assassin, Steph Curry. LeBron James, who's an aging, washed-up ball player, but every once in a while when he decides to play, he hasn't done that in 2019. I was right about that. Where are the people emailing me? Hey, Ben, you were right. LeBron's injury-prone because he's past his prime. But anyway, I digress. So when LeBron goes turbo time, he can remind you of his glory days with the Cavaliers where he would take games over. And the greatest LeBron performance I ever saw was against the Pistons when I think he scored all the points in the overtime. Remember that? It was just insane, that performance by LeBron James. Kevin Durant. He's got a smoothness to his game. And Russell Westbrook, while I am not a fan of Russell Westbrook, he provides a nasty scowl. And he always looks like he's got flatulence, which it's unique to watch him play because he always looks like he's got to let some gas out, but he can't quite get it out. And it's upsetting to him. It's bothering him. But watching James Harden play is the word is tedious. The word is tedious for Harden. I mean, sure, there are, you know, there's more than one way to peel an orange, right, as the old line goes. But there's nothing in the bag of tools that Harden provides that moves the needle for me. Now, maybe for you, you're different. I need more razzle-dazzle. I like the razzle-dazzle. And yes, you occasionally get a Euro step out of Harden. He'll do that every once in a while. You'll get the fallback three-pointer, which he's done a lot this year. So what am I getting at? Let me explain. All right. His signature move is what? Drawing fouls. Snooze. Right? I mean, the argument, I've heard this argument, well, the beard, he has to do all the heavy lifting. The grueling, exhausting schedule, he's played more than any other star. And that is true, but I'll give Harden credit. I mean, the guy plays. He's not a dog like a lot of these stars like Kawhi Leonard who takes nights off because he needs to rest. Well, what a pussy willow. But anyway, so the point, you know, block, we go on and on and all this. Yeah. So you can sell that to somebody else as far as him doing having to do everything. That is by design. This is what I'm getting at, all right? Building up to this crescendo. James Harden has turned the beautiful game of basketball into a one-man spectacle. It's essentially, it reminds me of like 90s basketball to a degree. They used to do this a lot in the 90s in the NBA, where if you watch the Rockets play, it is everything is directed to get Harden as many stats as he can, you know, as many points as he can possibly get, right? I am confident that there are other players on the Rockets, they're all NBA players, that somebody else could actually score the basketball. And the Rockets would be better off. There's this idea that the Rockets can only play this way, which I don't believe. I don't believe this, but this is the equivalent of when Russell Westbrook, as I pointed out, he was filling the stat sheet because players were doing everything in their power to make sure he got all the rebounds and all that, and they were feeding his statistics. He was adding on to them in blowout games and whatnot. But basketball, when played right, there's a it's the beautiful game, as I said, the beautiful game. The Rockets, it's get the ball to James Harden as quickly as you can, and everyone else on the other side of the court plays patty cake. They play patty cake, and then Harden does what he wants, and then we're told the Beard has scored 261 points in a row the last five games. All of them were unassisted. Right? All of them are unassisted. Now, I'm going to argue that is not true. Now, how can I argue an absolute? How can I argue that James Harden, 261 points in a row, the last five games, that those points, they say were unassisted, but I say no. Here's my case. Let me make my case. James Harden actually gets a ton of assists, and they're his teammates. His teammates, though, happen to be wearing whistles, okay? Whistle, whistle, whistle while you work. He gets Michael Jordan level officiating, but it's been a while. Maybe it's even worse than Jordan. James Harden takes an NBA leading 11.9 foul shots per game. That is absurd. You can have physicality in the NBA without a conga line to the foul stripe, but not when the Rockets' James Harden has the ball. Now, part B of this, James Harden is the big poppy of the NBA. Now, what do I mean by that? He is your standard designated hitter. Harden can score 35-plus points a game because he takes every shot. He is a liability on defense. He plays half the game, right? That's the argument with Edgar Martinez and these DHs over the years. Well, they're great offensive players. They play 50% of the game. Those lazy plays are legendary of James Harden. If you're bored and you want to go into a rabbit hole on YouTube, type in James Harden defense. And you will laugh your ass off. It is Manny Machado-like. Like, we goof on Manny Machado because the guy said he wasn't going to hustle and then didn't hustle in the World Series when he, the World Series, not a spring training game, not a random Wednesday a businessman special. No, he didn't hustle in the World Series. James Harden in the playoffs, he's pulled the Machado. Takes plays off, he dogs it, plays half the time. Now, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I recall the other contemporaries, great offensive players, Jordan, even Kobe Bryant, who would at least give an effort defensively, right? Put hands on balls, as Kobe Bryant used to say with Phil Jackson. That was his mantra. I don't see Harden doing that. Now, some have said that Harden has improved this year. Maybe my television at the Maller Mansion is broken because I haven't noticed. Now, I will tell you that Harden has simply gotten better at pretending like he's playing defense, like he's doing a little more body language into it, but the Beard is still detached. He's indifferent on that end of the court, which is his prerogative. He's gotten away with it his entire career. He's unable to mask it. Maybe he's masking it more to most for the uneducated that think he's engaged, but I'm not buying it because I haven't seen it. And I've watched a lot of the Rockets, and I haven't noticed that. Now, the last point here, James Harden, the tremendous success is a trend in the regular season, right? That's got staying power. It's a fad in the postseason. It is unsustainable. It's been unsustainable. Now, my evidence, go to the numbers. Let's go to the numbers. James Harden, as I said, he leads the world in foul shots attempted per game, almost 12 a game. Last season, in the postseason, he averaged less than 8 trips to the charity stripe per game in the postseason. Now, that might not seem like a big drop to you, but if you watch the NBA playoffs, the margins are normally razor thin in the postseason. So when you drop from 12 foul shots a game and your team depends on that to less than 8 foul shots a game. That is a massive decline, right? And Harden is a career 42% shooter in the playoffs. He shot 32% from three-point range, I believe. Those numbers are way down from his regular season shooting percentages. Now, why is that? Is the moment too big for James Harden, the postseason stage too bright, the lights, do they play better defense? Sure, right? Sure, that's some of it. But my theory is that this is a direct result of the game of basketball being officiated differently. That the same teammates that helped James Harden in the regular season, those teammates vanish in the postseason. The referees swallow the whistle. You can breathe and put a body on James Harden, and they don't hand him as many trips to the foul line. You got to earn it a little more. You got to be real fouls. And as a result, the mistakes pile up and frustration sets in, and Harden's disappeared in some playoff games. Remember against the Spurs a couple years ago? And he's ended up mostly being miserable failures. Now, he's had some big performances in the playoffs, and the numbers aren't horrific, but compared to the regular season, the numbers are down across the board. All right, it is the Ben Maller Show on Fox. I'm done ranting about James Harden, but if you want to add on to that, tell me how great that monologue was. 877-99 on Fox is the number, 877-996-6369. We're also on Twitter, at Ben Maller. That's at Ben Maller, and you can be part of the festivities there as well. We say hello to Edmund Dallas, Steamboat Willie, Judas Solid Gold Garcia.
Now, Ben, you know I'm Mr. NBA, but I had heard that in that game where Harden had 61 points that no teammates assisted on any of his baskets, and then that's gone on now for a couple of games? Is that really true? That, I mean, I know he dominates the ball and all that, but...
Yes. He's been five straight games.
That is unbelievable. Do you not find that incredible? Well,
did you see that Tucker blooper the other day that they passed the ball to...
Yeah, what was he thinking on that play?
P.J. Tucker, right? They passed the ball to P.J. Tucker under the basket, and he treated it like it did have the bubonic plague. He didn't want to touch it, and it was the funniest thing, because one of the Knicks players is standing right there, who knows, because nobody's famous on the Knicks, and picked it up and scored. It was hilarious.
It was so odd. Yeah, I was like,
it's like there's a mandate to, you know, you can't.
I was like, why are you giving me the ball? I'm not James Harden.
You are a peon. Only the great James Harden can touch the basketball. You can't touch the family jewels. That's a family jewels. How dare you?
I mean, like I said, I understand superstars are going to dominate the ball, but doesn't that seem insane to you that not one guy is? I mean, does he ever give up the ball, or is it? I mean,
well, sometimes he's forced to, but they usually pass it back to him.
I know he takes a lot of shots and obviously he scores a lot, but if you're the other team, don't you try and force him to pass it to someone else? They haven't shot the ball in, every 20 minutes another guy gets a shot. It seems like that might be a good strategy.
I don't know. Yeah. What do you think of my analogy? This is very similar to what Westbrook did, where he was stat stuffing. And the Rockets haven't been terrible. They've won some of these games here. And the argument is, well, they just don't have their full allotment of players. And I understand that. But these guys, you know, Eric Gordon was a fringe all-star at one point. And I saw him. He can shoot the ball with the Clippers. And Kenneth Faried had some good years with the Nuggets back in the day, and you know Austin Rivers sucks, but I mean they got guys. I mean, they have some players that can actually score.
Well, I mean, but they are having a relative amount of success with what they're doing. Of course, the question is, can it be sustained? Can he do this long term?
Well, no.
The answer is
obviously in the playoffs,
not.
He can't do that because he doesn't get those calls.
Yeah, and Chris Paul will come back. He'll get hurt again, and then he'll be out. And the Rockets, Harden's been scoring a bunch of points over the last 20 games, 30 games. They're 5-5 their last 10. I believe they are, you know, so then the record's not over the top great, but you know, fine. I think 7 games over 500.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.
All right, let's get to it. Here we go.
It's Maller.
How about that?
Yeah. To the third degree.
All right.
Excited. This is when Big Ben gets grilled.
And we headed over to the Koopa Loop. He was hanging with Elton John yesterday. Now he's back slumming with us.
Ben, there were some reports spreading around that the struggling NBA TV ratings are a driving force as to why Kevin Durant to the Knicks is a very real possibility. Are you buying that?
I do not buy that. Durant could end up with the Knicks, but it's not going to be because of television ratings, right? First of all, Durant, a fabulous player, volatile, unpredictable on the court and off the court, too thin skin for New York, right? Durant couldn't handle Oklahoma City. He can't handle San Francisco. He wants to brawl with teenage trolls on Twitter. Imagine how he's going to handle the tabloids in Gotham. Would be a disaster. And secondly, despite the Slim Reaper's success on the court, I don't recall him being a drawing card for television ratings. So it's more that New York propaganda where they're like, well, if the Knicks are good, the ratings are going to follow. I don't believe that is necessarily true. Now, the NBA does need an East Coast team to be relevant. That is, the Celtics are good, but the people aren't flocking to watch the Celtics. Nobody's watching the Raptors. I think there's a much better chance Durant ends up in L.A. than he does New York. That is a depressing franchise. Next!
Ben, the Bengals director of player personnel said this week that the team is, quote, very comfortable with Andy Dalton.
Yes.
Now, what are the odds that Dalton stays with Cincinnati?
All right, so I believe the odds on this. I saw this quote. I think the odds are 35%. I think there's still a better chance that Dalton is not there, right? A, it would make sense. You've got a new coach, Zach Taylor, who used to clean the jockstrap of the Rams coach, Sean McVay. So if you've got a new coach, you want to bring in your own quarterback, start fresh. If Taylor wins, but he's got Marvin Lewis's old quarterback, I believe that takes a little bit away from Zach Taylor's glory. These guys are all egomaniacs, so I would think you want to get your own quarterback in there. Now, the other thing, part B, Andy Dalton is average. Average is not bad. The Bengals have been mediocre. They were a playoff team 7 years under Marvin Lewis, but they didn't win. They are in the middle of the bell curve. The only thing keeping them from pulling the plug on Andy Dalton, I truly believe this, finances. Because compared to the other quarterbacks who are of mid-level value, Dalton is a value. Now he's a value. So, all right, next.
Ben, Patriot center David Andrews compared the Super Bowl to your wedding day. He said people freak out about all these small details, but no one really remembers them. They just remember the results of the wedding.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this?
I think this is actually spot on. I think this is a great analogy, right? I think it's, number one, the NFL obsesses, right, with every detail. Ridiculous in the Super Bowl. It is the showcase event for their sport, their industry. It's an international event. People that don't even know anything about American football, our friends in countries far away, are watching. It's a gigantic party for the one percenters in America. And so the NFL does everything they can. It's like a wedding, right? And, you know, the cliche for a wedding for most regular weddings, the guy playing has no say in the wedding. Everyone else is done. They tell you where to go. They tell you what to wear, when to be there. It's like the Super Bowl, right? They tell you where to go, what time you need to be there, what you need to wear, the whole thing. It's like a wedding, right? And number two, as I've often ranted about over the years, the brain remembers only two things about a sporting event, the emotional peak and the end of the game. That's it, right? Any Super Bowl, there's two things. Now, the exception to that, you know what the exception is? Boobies. Janet Jackson and that Super Bowl back in Houston where Janet Jackson at halftime did the old nipple flash. That's it. Other than that, it's the turning point in the game and the end. You don't remember the other stuff. You don't have to. You got a lot of crap in your brain. You don't have room in your brain to remember every small detail. Now, if you have there's some people that have kind of an illness and they remember everything, but that would be an illness. That would be an illness. Imagine if you remembered every single minute of every second of your life. How you doing, cowboy? All right, there we go, Coop. How'd we do on Mallet of Third Degree?
That was like the longest third degree ever. You passed.
I won! Amazing. I won the game.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Knock, knock. Who's there?
Lame week.
Lame week who? It's Big Ben's lame joke of the week.
All right, these are actual jokes from actual listeners. Great job, man. We used to start out, we had like two or three guys sending jokes. And now we've added more and more. And it's wonderful. Some guys only send one joke every couple months. Other guys every week. It's really fun. So thank you, guys. It's listener-generated content. And we appreciate you. And we say hello to Weed Man. He'll be over there. He's going, hello, Weed Man. Are you there? A lot of jokes about you.
I love you. I love you, Ben. Make me laugh.
All right. Eddie's over there. I'll bounce the joke off Eddie. He'll bounce it back to me. Roberto will play this if it's funny. He'll play this if it's not funny. And he'll play this if it can go either way. Coop's got his offensive jokes of the week. And we're doing this for fun. If you're very sensitive and you don't like comedy, then don't listen. All right, here we go. Did you hear about the stuttering convict?
The stuttering convict. No, I did not hear about that.
It was tragic. He died before completing his sentence. That's Andy in Iowa. Andy in Iowa. The Warriors held their first dance party of the year earlier this week.
A dance party?
Yeah, they had a boogie on the floor right there. They had a... So just Josh. Oh,
that was not funny.
That's
Boogie Cousins.
You don't have to explain it.
I'm his bitch. Clearly. You don't
without
have a doubt.
You don't have to explain it. Yeah, moving on. The Department of Agriculture said the United States has a stockpile of nearly 1.4 billion tons of cheese, Eddie.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, the government, since the shutdown's going on, is now asking C.J. Anderson to help reduce the load there. So George in Rochester.
I'm willing to help as well.
George in Rochester, Minnesota.
Part.
Costco selling this 27-pound tub of macaroni and cheese. You've seen that probably with a shelf life of 20 years, Eddie.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Well, interesting enough, it was not on Andy Reid's shelf more than 2 days. So it only lasted 2 days. So George in
eating to cope with the loss, yeah.
In Rochester, Minnesota. I think this Almond Joy joke should go to Coop. I should have sent that to Coop. That's a bad job by me, Gordon. Bartolo Colon has been inspired by the New Orleans Saints fans.
Is that right? In what way?
Yeah, Bartolo is suing every restaurant in America for having their dessert intercepted during overtime. So Gordon in Tacoma. Why do sharks swim in water?
I don't know, Ben. Why do sharks swim in water?
Because pepper makes them sneeze, Eddie. That's from Trucker Craig. That's one serious Sean would have laughed his ass off. Coop, look, you got any jokes over there, Coop? Coop's got offensive jokes. I do the
one, Coop.
Yeah, I've got a two-parter here.
Okay.
What's the difference between Weed Man Hippie and Roy Halladay?
Oh boy.
Oh
boy.
Well, Roy Halladay is in the Hall of Fame, and Weed Man Hippie isn't.
Of course, that's a, yeah.
What do Weed Man Hippie and Roy Halladay have in common?
What do Weed Man and Roy Halladay have? I don't know.
Neither one of them know how to fly a plane.
Wow, I'm offended. All right,
that's from Justin in Cincinnati.
What do a Mahler monologue and Angry Bill's date have in common?
A Mahler monologue and Angry Bill's date?
Yeah.
What do they have in common?
They both end up tied together. That's how that... there you go. All right.
You take that in your pooper and pop it.
Yeah. That's Bill in Iowa. Immigration reform is a hot-button issue in the United States. So why would Roberto be considered a dreamer?
Hold on. He hasn't said the punchline yet. Why would Roberto be a dreamer as far as that goes?
He thinks the Lakers are going to win a championship this year. That was from Eek in Roseville, Minnesota. Good job, Eek.
Racist.
Now, these next three all have something in common. What do me, Ben, and the Roman Empire have in common?
Ben and the Roman Empire, what do they have in common?
They have both crucified a lot of saints, Eddie. Bill and Iowa, again, good job by you, Bill. Who is a Saints fan's favorite radio host?
I know it's not you.
No, it's... It's Lee Wine, actually. All right. Did you hear Sean Payton was spotted in Napa Valley yesterday?
No, I did not hear that.
Yeah, now that the Saints season's over, he decided the best way to get his mind off the loss was to drink some wine, Eddie. That's a Matt, the Warrior Raider A's fan. Just wait, you're coming next. What do Sean Payton and a deaf person have in common?
Sean Payton and a deaf person. What do they have in common, Ben?
They get no calls, Eddie. They get no. All right. We are allowed to rip the hearing impaired because they can't. You know, they can't fight us. All right. We will get to the rest of the jokes. We'll get to the rest of the jokes there. Stand by, Weed Man. You're on the on deck circle. Coop's got some more jokes. We'll get to all that. Big Ben's Lame Jokes of the Week continues next. All right, back to it we go. It's Big Ben's Lame Jokes of the Week. These are actual jokes sent in by actual listeners. Good job by you guys. You really nailed it with these jokes. Weed Man, are you there, Weed Man? Hello, Weed Man.
This is a high-class comedy club. I hope everybody appreciates this. Download the podcast.
I don't think you're going to say that anymore. Who is Weed Man Hippie's favorite quarterback?
Who is Weed Man Hippie's favorite quarterback? I don't know, Ben.
Panhandle Cunningham. That's Kurt from Earth. Did you hear Weed Man saw Full Moon the other night?
No, I did not hear that.
Yeah,
no.
The red one.
Yeah. No, it wasn't actually the moon. It was just one of the bums outside his bedroom there bending over. That's Matt, the Warrior Raider A's fan. Weed Man Hippie is so poor, Eddie.
How poor is he, Ben?
His favorite alien is called EBT. That's
a winner, right
there. I love EBT. All
right, Kurt from Earth. What kind of pirate would shut up? What kind of pirate would Weed Man Hippie be?
Oh my God! What I don't know, Ben. What kind of pirate would Weed Man Hippie be?
A beg leg pirate. That's Anthony and Anaheim. What would Weed Man's character be if he was on Family Guy?
Ooh, Weed Man's character on Family Guy. Who would that be?
Well, it'd be Beg Griffin, of course. That would be. It's Big Ben's lame. That's Anthony again. Big Ben's lame jokes of the week. Did you hear that Weed Man Hippie is exempt from filing taxes?
Oh, no, I did not hear that.
Yeah, well, they haven't seen income from him in a decade, Eddie. So that's Sean. Sean. He's getting upset. Sean in Oceanside. Did you hear Weed Man is catching a ride with a P1 to visit the Fox Sports studios?
Oh, no, I did not hear that.
Yeah, he said it will be the first time he's ever been inside a Flexus. So that's just Josh.
He likes that.
That's just Josh. How many Weed Man Hippies does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I don't know. How many Weed Man Hippies does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Doesn't matter. He can't afford power, so who cares? All right. That's Trucker Craig. Craig. I don't know if you heard, but it was rumored this week that Weed Man Hippie came into a chunk of cash courtesy of the government.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah, at first he thought that the note on his front door said V.A. Grant. Turns out it actually just said vagrant is what it said there. So, from Jay Scoop. Shut up. Weed Man Hippie is joining the band One Direction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're changing their name now to No Direction is what they're changing the name to. That's from Eek in Roseville, Minnesota. All right, that's enough of the Weed Man stuff. Eddie, you know that you and your wife, you might go to Mexico for the Charger game, right?
Yeah, it's being discussed.
So you can visit one of the El Chapo museums if you've got the time. You want to do that, Eddie?
No, I'm good.
Well, they're actually just cemeteries. The museums are just... all right, go ahead, Coop. What do you got? I have my closer after you.
How can you tell when a mime is a lesbian?
I don't know.
When she's trying to get into the box.
Wow. All right, that's not right. All right, how dare you? I'm offended. All right, here's the closer. Here we go. This is from Surfer Todd the Comedian. Why is Bartolo Colon so excited about the Super Bowl, Eddie?
Why is Bartolo excited about the Super Bowl, Ben?
Because he goes nuts over big Sundays. There it is, right there. Big Ben's lame jokes of the week.